Welcome to Fat Camp Show number 21 for sometime around the beginning of February 2017. Fatbike.com presents Fat Camp, a more or less monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/radio or subscribe to our feed on iTunes. Bells, disappointing moments of your day. Searing painful. Couple quick notes about the sound on the show. First, we had a guest appearance from my golden retriever. He was napping while we were recording, and I didn't think his snoring would come through, but it did. Hopefully it isn't too annoying. Secondly, Andy and I are trying out a new mic setup, so the quality is a bit different than in previous shows. We're going to try to dial in our setup moving forward and hopefully be able to get it to where we want it. So thanks for your patience on this. The dogs just get a taste. Welcome, campers.
Welcome. How you doing, Ken?
Doing wonderfully.
Awesome. Awesome. Another free day today.
Yep. Today's a nice day for us.
We are in the middle of January recording this, and we are in our third thaw process.
Yes, it's not been a consistent winter.
No, so, we had the stud shootout, and yep. We're still rolling with those pretty much.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot more opportunities to test studs.
We certainly are. Oh, why is that?
Oh, just because it's going to, as soon as our temperatures drop, it's going to be icy again, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And limited snow, but we've been getting out, regularly, you've been working your tail off trying to keep everything open for us.
Yep, doing a lot of grooming, quote-unquote grooming. We've been doing some grooming, but more we've just been trying to keep our, quote-unquote, outer loop, one of our local trails ridden in. It's about, total, it's between a 16 and 17-mile loop. Part of that is part of a smaller fat bike loop, so I think there's only, 13 miles?
Probably.
That hasn't been groomed, so yeah. What we've been doing is trying to get out there and ride it in with either the V tire, 2XLs or, similar 4.8-inch tire. And it turns into a really, really nice little, bit of single tractor ride.
It's a bitch.
Ah!
Sorry. It's hard, I meant to say.
I wasn't, guffawing over, you swearing on that one. I was guffawing because when it's good conditions, when it's hard and you're not breaking trail, it's amazing. No. But you are riding down a little rut.
Yeah.
It's at best maybe a 6-inch, 7-inch, if there's a bunch of people that have ridden an 8-inch wide, track that you got to stay in this rut and not fall out of.
It's a fine line between surrendering to the flow and going insane.
Just kind of surrender to the flow, man. Right, yeah. Right.
But, this is like the midwinter show, We're right in it, and we have a whole nother, who knows what February could bring. But, anyway, we've got some things we want to talk about today.
Well, real quick. Yeah. We've got to end up putting our disclaimers in there. We're trying out a new mic today.
Yep.
So, we'll see how the audio turns out. And the other thing is we have a sleeping dog fairly close to the mic. So
I'd say he's 12 inches away from the mic.
Yeah, so we might get some snoring. It's not Andy falling asleep, listening to me go off forever about tires or something like that. It's just a sleeping golden retriever.
Yeah,
so,
but it should work out. Anyways, yep. We've got some things some things that have come up we're going to talk about, and then we're going to get to some emails that some people have sent us. If you want to email us, you can email us at fatcamppodcasters,
plural.
It's plural, at gmail.com. And, of course, we're on the Instagram. We're up to, 130 people are watching the pictures that we put up on the Instagram. The Instagram is fatcamppodcast, I think. Search it and you'll find it. But, yeah. So those are two ways you can get in touch with us, and we'll share some emails that we've gotten recently. But first thing that pissed me off was that I recently acquired a set of frame carbon wheels.
Yep, which you've been testing.
Yep, tubeless ready. And I wanted to get some tubeless ready tires that are really aggressive.
And sort of the backstory is... these tubeless ready rims are a single wall carbon rim.
Yeah.
So there's some texture to them, like where the smoke nipples come through the rim.
Right.
So sometimes if you don't have a tubeless ready tire, it can be difficult to mount a tire tubeless. So like if it's not rated for tubeless ready.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of where you're going, where you wanted to end up, you know, mounting an aggressive 4.8 inch tire tubeless.
Yeah.
But like the Bud and the Lou, not tubeless ready. And it ends up being a real bear, and it's been leaking sometimes, and you've had just a bunch of issues. You know, nothing really horrible. You were able to get them, but...
So the question came up, well, what are some tubeless-ready tires that are aggressive and 4.8 inches or more? And what I was told was that there's limited options.
Yep.
So we
brainstormed, right. And of the options that are out there, you've got... you know, the Maxxis, I think it's the Minion. FBR and FBF.
Yep.
That's labeled, I think, as a 4.8. I don't remember what exactly it's labeled.
Okay.
But, it's, if I remember correctly, 0.1 inches smaller than like a Bud and a Lou.
Okay.
So it's not quite as big. You rode those a fair amount last winter when you were testing out the frame. Yep. What were your thoughts on them?
They were good. Mm-hmm. I was on mostly groom stuff, but they're not powder hounds.
No, they're not nearly as good as a Bud and a Lou.
They're not like Bud and Lou.
Yeah, Bud and Lou definitely were.
But fairly aggressive.
Yep.
And they went tubeless fine, but I'm looking for something bigger.
Yep.
So the other
bigger
option
bigger or was gnarlier. Like, just something that's gonna give you a little more grip in the deep
other
stuff.
Option was cannoli.
Yep, that's what I've been testing. Okay. That once again it's labeled as a 4.8. It's 0.1 inches smaller than a Bud and Lou, so it's almost the same exact size as the Maxxis tire.
Okay.
Really aggressive. Works well in, you know, like kind of breaking trail type situations. It's kind of a pig weight-wise. They weigh 2,000 grams per tire.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's like a pound and a half, I think. Almost 2 pounds difference between that and the Bud and the Lou.
Can your everyday guy get the cannolis right now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So there was those two options. What else is aggressive in 4.8 at least? And tubeless ready?
V tire has got some. Now, I haven't got my hands on, what is it, the Snowshoe XL.
Yeah.
I think we might need to move the mic because...
He's starting to snore?
Yeah, the snoring golden is starting to pick up.
We got him. He's good.
Okay. We have a little padding happy now.
We'll wake him up a little bit here.
Yep. So... The Snow Avalanche,
It's
supposedly 4.8. I'm supposed to be getting a pair of those here pretty soon to test, but I haven't got them yet, so I don't really know how those are.
Right.
Aren't. My guess is they are not going to be nearly as aggressive when it comes to drive traction as a Bud or a Lou. If the knob heights are the same on the 4.8 as the 4-inch version, the 4-inch version has... taller side knobs. I think they were like 7 or 8 millimeters tall.
Mm-hmm.
And the center knobs were like, I want to say it's 4 or 5 millimeters tall.
Yeah.
So it cornered really well, but I'm guessing that's going to compromise on its drive traction.
So bottom line, if Surly would just make Bud and Lou tubeless ready,
Life would be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've done that with other 4.8 inch tires like the Nard.
Yeah.
That's got a tubeless ready bead on it.
Right.
But I guess they'd probably have to change the mold or something. You know, to do the Bud and the Lou, and they just haven't done that yet, which is a bummer.
Well, and for where we live, or where, you know, some people that listen to this live, Bud and Lou is what you want in the winter.
It's still probably the best tire all around for your really snowy conditions.
So that was the first item that kind of made me angry.
Yes. Yep.
I couldn't go. But if you work hard enough, you can get a non-tubeless ready tire to go tubeless on a tubeless ready rim.
Yep. Yeah, it's totally possible.
Just kind of finicky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
What else did you want to... what was the other thing here?
The Ranger.
Okay.
The WTB Ranger, which I know you are a big fan of.
I think
it's a good tire, too. WTB just ended up releasing a different version of the 29er version of that.
Okay.
With a tough casing.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, I'm actually going to... trying to open it up right now to get the weight on those.
I was going to say, how much heavier is it?
I want to say it was 1,100 grams. I might end up being off by
1140.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, it's definitely heavier. You know, your you're going to be hauling around more to get that extra durability. But that said, I mean, for a pretty solid tire for all-around conditions, I think they'd be great for, like, bike packing and things like that.
This isn't going to improve the wear on the knobs, though, will it?
I wouldn't think so. I didn't see anything about the compound changing on the tire.
Because that's one of the biggest complaints that I've... And actually, I just read it recently, that the knob wear. You know,
yeah.
And we've talked about that before. But this was knob wear from not a rocky place. It was from, like, southeastern Michigan.
Well, and it's like if you've got clay or other hard conditions and you're riding it hard, it's still going to wear out. I mean, it doesn't have to end up being rocky. I mean, I went through and five rides, a tire, on rocky conditions. So I can see in half a season in, just harder pack conditions, you're doing the same thing.
So for a bike packing situation, this is when you would want a tougher sidewall. Is that what you call it?
Yeah. Okay. It's just the casing on there is tougher. Yeah. So, you have less worry about slicing a sidewall or something that might be really debilitating. So, it's a more reliable setup. So you're going to be able to end up riding and not have to worry about, a mechanical, basically.
Right. Probably if you're backpacking, you're not really too concerned about.
Well, I'd say for that, I could see it for, certain conditions where you're doing more rugged, rocky trails. Okay. I could see it working pretty darn well, too.
Cool.
Just anytime you need a more burly tire. I mean, that's always been the big knock on these, was that they held up okay sidewall-wise, but you could rip them, you know? So they've got a different version of them, which is good.
Yeah, and the price point is, again...
Yeah, really reasonable.
Rider friendly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's cool.
Yep.
That's good.
Certainly is.
Right. The other thing is kind of cool for people around the Great Lakes State, which is Michigan, is that, and there'll be, I'm going to put a link up on this. Oh, I'm skipping one. But Michigan has put together a map of all the groom winter fat bike trails.
Yeah. It's a real simple map. It's got all these little pinpoints of where all groomed trails are.
Yeah.
And if you click on them, it'll tell you a little bit about the trail, like the base of the trail system name, how many miles there are, and it'll have a link to grooming conditions.
And it appears, just as a rough estimate, nearly around 20 groomed trails in the Lower Peninsula.
Yep.
Mostly along the West Coast-ish.
Yep.
From Kalamazoo all the way up to Petoskey. But... Man, amazing that within 1 to 2 winters.
Oh, it's just blown up.
People are just thriving on the groom.
Yeah, it's very, very, very cool.
And it's getting more people out there.
Yeah.
Exactly. The person that I live with, she's not a big, huge fat biker, but if it's groomed and the conditions are perfect, I can get her out there on there.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't have to work too hard, and there's no tissue box that's needed, and it works out pretty well. So check that out if you get some time and you're around Michigan or you're northern Indiana, northern Ohio or something like that. There's some places to ride. I've been referencing a lot of people to this map, saying, hey, where can I ride? I'm over here and I hear that you know where to go. And I'm like, check out this map.
Yep.
There you go. Pretty reliable source.
Now, one quick note on groomed trails.
Okay.
I've debated numerous ways of saying this. But don't be a jerk, don't be a pussy, don't be a wuss, wear your man pants, but I don't know how you want to phrase it, but don't walk in the groomed trail area. Like, if you can't ride a section, walk off the trail.
Right.
Because all you're going to do is, if you're walking where everybody's trying to ride, you're just going to screw it up so the next person can't make it for sure. And it's like, you might be out there on a day when the conditions aren't right, or you don't have the right gear set up, or whatever. And you don't want to end up being a jerk and screwing it up for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
This is, it's something that's been happening on our trails a little bit.
Yeah.
Not bad, but it's just one of those things where, like, we had a distinctive boot track already in the snow on
steps.
The side.
Oh, yeah, steps.
Yeah. Yeah. And, some jerk basically decided... I heard a bleep and I was hoping it was still recording. But some jerk decided to end up walking right down the middle of the trail. And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's like, that's totally not cool. It completely screwed it up. I wasn't able to end up riding it because of them. It was one of those days where there was just enough structure to the snow, that if you like rode really smooth, you didn't put any power spikes in or anything, you wouldn't like saw into the snow, you could just stay floating on top. And as soon as I hit a compromise section like that, where that dork ended up walking in the middle of the goddamn trail, I would stay, like buzzsaw into the snow,
right?
And I have to like, you know, try to do all this stuff to get back about kind of up on plane,
sure,
you know, like kind of do like almost a trials hop maneuver, and then, you know, maybe I could get it, maybe I couldn't, all because of some dork didn't want to end up walking where everybody else had walked.
Right.
So.
Well, and what I've noticed in this, we might be, maybe this is, I don't know who I'm going to offend and I don't know what's going to happen, but when I snowshoe, I don't want to snowshoe on a groomed, flat, hard-packed surface. I like to snowshoe where there's some deep snow so that I can enjoy the snowshoe flotation.
Yeah.
And a lot, most of the time, the people that snowshoe on a fat bike groomed trail don't really affect it too much.
Right.
But I don't know why they're not enjoying the snowshoe essence of going through, like...
Using snowshoes for snowshoes?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It kind of frustrates. It doesn't really ruin the trail, but I'm just like, why would you snowshoe on this sidewalk?
Yeah, and, you know, on the... I don't know what you want to call it, the beginner loop out at the Big M.
Yeah.
You know, that's where that happens a lot. Just totally distracted me with that sound.
Sorry.
Andy.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's where we get it most of the time. I'm not too against that because the trail's pretty wide and you can find other places to get around. It doesn't really compromise it too much and some stuff like that.
Yeah, but still.
And I don't want to end up being really uptight like some of the skiers in this area.
Well, that's the other thing is that if you can on a classic groomed cross-country ski trail, you're allowed to snowshoe on the side of the cross-country ski trail. But you can't ride your bike on the side of the ski trail. I'm not going to say the F word, but what is the difference between snowshoeing on the side of the ski trail, which is totally fine, and riding your bike on the side of the ski trail, which is not totally fine?
I have no idea.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, there's. I'm not going to disparage people, but my guess is there aren't 100% rational thoughts and feelings associated with that decision.
Okay.
And we'll leave it at that.
Okay. So what did 907 do? They've got
thank you for pulling me out of that dark place that I was about ready to go to.
Right. 907 comes out with something new here.
Yeah, they got the Tundra aluminum bike, which, you know, looks like it's a pretty pretty nice, you know, setup, a good all-rounder.
Yeah. And kids bikes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the Tundra, it's got, you know, suspension corrected geometry. It's kind of more of an, you know, an all season bike. So it's kind of neat to end up seeing a good affordable option. And those kids bikes, oh my goodness.
I know.
Oh man. I wish I was a kid nowadays and had really affluent parents.
Totally.
My goodness, there's some cool kids bikes.
Oh, both my kids want fat bikes, but they're only going to, I want to like be able to rent them for a year because in the following year, they're not going to fit them anymore.
You've got two kids, man. They're about perfectly spaced. You get 2 years out of each bike, you know?
I wish I could like swap wheels out on like a 24-inch fat bike and then swap in 26-inch mountain bike tires. But
I bet you probably could.
I did a little bit of research on it last year, working with, dealing with Specialized kids,
yeah,
fat bikes. And I didn't get my question answered, so
I can, based upon, I haven't formally looked at that question,
okay,
but you know, it's Eric Nolan, I think that's his name, it's the guy at Peacock Groove.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's been a big champion of the 24-inch fat bike wheels,
right?
And people have been listening to Fat Bike Radio will be familiar with this because, you know, Gomez and Sven, I think they had him on one time, they've talked about it a bunch of times,
okay,
his last summer, or excuse me, last winter. That was a pretty common thing because there's a lot of people who are saying 24-inch fat bike wheels were like where it's at,
right,
especially for smaller statured riders. So at that time, I remember Nolan was saying that a 24-inch fat bike, like 4-inch tire,
right,
is almost the same exact diameter as a 26-inch traditional mountain bike.
Gotcha.
So I think it wouldn't be any problem at all.
Oh, I know what it was. The 24-inch fat bike was still too big for her.
Oh.
She needed a 20-inch. So
okay.
I'm not going there yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Then but anyway, 907, more fat bikes for kids. That's cool.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I mean, I'm really glad to see some options.
If you're
like
the kid that's got a fat bike and you roll in to the fat bike loop at the local ski place, you're going to be the stud.
Yeah, you are.
Or the studette.
Yep. You're going to be the Grom.
That's cool. There's a link down there if you want to check out what 907's doing with their new stuff. Another thing, one more thing, a couple more things before we get in some emails. Tell me about this tire cutting tool.
I think we actually talked about it before. Yeah, it was something I remember putting in the show notes. If you're a dork and you want to end up modifying tires,
yeah,
this is a really, 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 really cool tool.
How's it specifically for this?
Well, okay, so it's got kind of a pincher-type cutter design on it.
Yeah, but I've got one at home like that. It's not just, it doesn't say four tires, though.
If you look at the way it cuts, it's got a really, really sharp tip on it.
Oh.
So that it'll be able to end up, you know, cutting the rubber without kind of like displacing it a bunch.
So it's like using a cable cutter versus needle nose pliers.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Exactly. All right, okay. And then the other thing is they've got a depth gauge on it. So that it'll keep it so you can consistently chop knobs off at the same height.
Ken, why would you want to do this?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, when it comes to like a 2XL...
That sounded like we scripted it, but we didn't.
No, you just got me excited because this is a tool that I've wanted.
Really?
Yeah, because like the 2XL, that is, you know, that's a tire with a heck of a lot of volume, but it tends to roll kind of slow. And this only applies to the black version. I think the white version might roll a little quicker in snow and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that is a 5.1 inch tire. It's not labeled as that, but that's what it truly measures out at. It's got really flipping tall knobs. They're like 7-8 millimeters tall.
Yeah.
You know, so it's as tall as any knob on any tire out there, really.
Right.
And I've wondered, okay, what would happen if, you know, I ended up paring down some of the knobs, you know, either in part or in whole. You know, perhaps it would start to roll a lot better, but you still have got this monster float tire, so there's a lot of conditions where it would do better. So, you know, there's times where, like, let's say you've got kind of a fragile crust or, you know, the trail hasn't been groomed consistently or there was, like, a ton of snow and then it was groomed.
Okay.
So, you know, you've got this structure that's very fragile. And sometimes what happens is if you've got big knobs that churn it up, all that really does is just kind of, like, saw through that very fragile structure. And then you kind of hamper the amount of float that you have.
Right.
Whereas you've got a less aggressively knobbed tire, but of the same float, it doesn't chew up the snow. It doesn't, like, disturb it as much. So it kind of keeps the structure in place more. So there can be a time where it could be better from a float standpoint to have a less knobby tire to stay on top. You're not just sawing through.
This is a dork tool.
Oh, yeah. It's a total dork tool. You know, the other case would end up being, like, using the 2XLs for beach riding.
Okay.
You know, once again, you don't want a big knobby tire in sand. It's just going to make it go slow. So, right. Like, maybe you chop off a lot of the center knobs and leave the side knobs or something like that and get it so it's going to roll a whole lot better. You know, there's a few different options that way.
So Schwalbe's making this.
Yep.
Okay.
So, sorry, we got a cat now scratching their claws over here on the couch.
We're good. We're good.
It's all one big family.
Everyone that listens to this show loves the sound of animals in the background.
Good. Good.
Yeah. What do you got next year? Three basic sizes of fat tires.
Oh, I don't know. This was just kind of a random thought that I had. It seems like we've kind of got three different classes of tires. There's tires that are, you know, 4 inch or right around, you know, you got some that are shortchanging it a little bit. They're like more like, you know, 3.6 or 3.5 inch or whatever.
They're labeled at 3.7?
No, their label is 4, but, you know, I mean, like, and I'm kind of, you know, calling out the 27.5 by 4 inch Bontrager tires and things like that.
Right, right.
If I've heard, but I don't really know. It sounds like Maxxis has been making some 27.5 by 4 inch tires, which are really 3.6 inch.
Okay.
They're kind of like plus tires. They're not really fat bike tires.
Jeez,
okay, so that wasn't actually even something that I was trying to bring it up here.
Okay.
But it's like, so I guess we might have four categories of tires or four basic sizes of tires. So we have those. We have tires that are truly trying to be 4 inches.
Yeah.
you know, plus or minus a little bit. Then we have tires that a lot of times are labeled as like 4.5 or 4.6 inches.
Okay.
Or like if you look at like the Dillinger 5, that's labeled as a 5-inch tire, but it's really a 4.6 inch or
on
whatever.
On a 100 mil rim.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you end up having the tires that are all trying to end up being bigger, where they're like, a lot of times they're labeled as the 4.8. They're, you know, that's kind of what we started out with.
Right, right.
You know, the Bud and the Lou are in there, sure. Cannoli, the Minion, you know, the Snow Avalanche. Some of those tires are all in that, you know, they're really truly like a 4.7, 4.8 inch tire.
Okay.
So we've kind of got these different almost categories that are laid out where, you know, the 4.8 inch tire is like trying to do the powder stuff, try to be a big volume tire. You've got those mid-volume tires, you know, the Barbagazis, the Specialized Ground Control, the, you know, the Dillinger 5s, the Dunder Beast and Flow Beast, you know, all of those, the Terrain Wazias, you know, those are all labeled as like 4.6 or basically work out to be almost exactly that size.
Okay.
And then you jump down and then you got just a slew of 4 inches, and then, you know, there's a few of them that are kind of in between, like a, you know, like measure out like 4.2 or whatever, but most of the time they're all right around 4 inches.
Gotcha.
So it seems like we're kind of starting to get these three categories of tires.
Right.
You know, it's not this just like continuum where we've got all these different things.
And depending upon where you live, the right size tire would be appropriate.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's good if we're trying to like kind of settle out on these three sizes because,
right.
You know. There is a big enough difference between each of those. You're definitely going to tell it on the trail in a lot of conditions. So I think it simplifies things for people out there. You know,
gotcha.
It's one of those things where, you know, you can be like, I'm using a 4.6. It's not cutting. I need to go up to the 4.8 5-inch tire range.
Right. Right.
Or, you know, I'm using the 4.6 and it's feeling kind of slow and heavy. I can bump down to a 4 and, it, you know.
How much width do you gain by switching to a wider rim with the same tire?
It can be significant. That was one of the things that kind of amazed me. So the Terrain Wazias, I can talk about those, and that really applies to that whole middle category, those 4.6 inch tires.
Because mm-hmm.
I just ended up having those on the Otso Wojtek,
mm-hmm.
and on there it measured out almost exactly 4.25 on a 70 mil rim. So that's kind of your summer rim type setup.
Right.
But then I throw it on 100 mil rim, and it measures out at a true 4.6.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, wow.
I mean,
that's a big difference.
It's a half inch,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Or pretty close.
Huh.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, the rim makes a big difference. And that kind of gets me into another level of geekitude, because that's one of the things that I've kind of, you know, people get very religious or whatever, evangelical about, you know, rim sizes and things like that. If you look at forums and stuff like that.
Right.
But the different rim sizes do have dramatically different feels to them.
Huh.
You know, like a very narrow rim, I like that on dirt. You know, it has a real nice, lively, almost springy feel.
Uh-huh.
Whereas on a 100 mil rim, the tire is much more, I don't know, it's less bouncy, it's, you know, it's a much more stable feel,
mm-hmm.
which is great when you're running really low pressure.
Right.
You know, it can have a significantly positive feel if you've got to be at those low pressures a lot of the time, but it can kind of feel dead when it's not in its ideal range.
Hmm.
So, you can dramatically change the feel of a tire depending on which one you're dealing with. And I guess, and then kind of along with that, you know, when we were talking about riding in our outer loop, you know, so we're riding down this, you know, 6 to 8 inch wide track,
mm-hmm.
where you're kind of bouncing off the edges. You know, it's
right.
like, there's a reason why we call it the game of operation.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
I mean, it's like you're kind of bouncing off and trying not to hit the sides.
Right.
If you've got a tire on a much more narrow rim, those knobs stick out further.
Right.
So when you go into the side, those knobs just kind of like buzzsaw into the edge of the trail.
Uh-huh.
And that adds a ton of friction, you know, because you're just like scraping left and right, snow off the sides.
Right.
Whereas some of the tires that have a little bit more narrow tread on a wide rim, like the Canolas are a good example of this.
Okay.
The casing is a little bit wider than the tread is. So when I would go and I'd bump up into the side of the trail.
Right.
I'd have just a nice, smooth sidewall that's bumping up against snow.
Okay.
And it wouldn't slow me down that much.
Yeah.
And then I could kind of like, you know, bounce off of that and get back into the middle of the trail. So there's some significant differences that way, you know, when it comes to rim size. And, you know, this is the level of geekitude that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to get into.
Right.
But it's been one of those things that just have, you know, going from a bike that's got a 70 mil rim to 100 mil rim and back and forth and back and forth, it's been just kind of an interesting thing to end up observing.
Gotcha. Holy shit. Or holy crap. Yep, that's a level of geekitude that I do not think about because I'm trying to focus on staying vertical. Huh.
Speaking of staying vertical.
Yeah.
An important observation and an update on our stud issue.
Yes.
So when we originally recorded the podcast about the studded tires, what had happened is we'd gone from a period where we had a bunch of snow and we got a bunch of rain and then it dropped down and all of the riding was in the low to at the highest mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was cold.
Yeah.
There was no liquid water anywhere.
Right.
And while we were doing that, I mean, we basically switched between the three different tires. There was the Snow Avalanche from V-Tire, which has got kind of a cone-shaped stud. There is the Terrain Wazia,
which...
Yeah, that would apply to the V tire,
right?
So the Terrain Wazia that had some pretty, you know, like tall studs that were really sharp.
Yep.
And then we ended up going with 45 North Dillinger 5, and that's got the concave stud,
right?
And they all seem to have about the same kind of stud grip performance.
Yeah, you know, we sussed out everything in that podcast. So.
Yeah, but then it got really warm,
right?
And we ended up going and riding around on ice that was just like completely flat. We basically this is when we had our second melt. We're in our third melt at this point right now.
Right.
We had our second melt. So there were these places where you just had nothing but just sheer ice. There's no texture whatsoever at all.
Yeah.
And we went for a ride and we started out and it was well below freezing. It was around 25.
Yeah.
And by the time we were done with that ride, it was up to, I don't know, 37, 38 degrees. Warm enough and some sun. So it was more than warm enough that there was a, sort of that layer of water on top of the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically were using, we were talking to our friend who's, he gets sketched out. He's accident prone.
He's a walking car accident. Yeah,
yeah, he is. He was talking about how he wished he had studs and, you know, out on the sidewalls and stuff like that because he can't hold a straight line and, you know, he thought that would help him and blah, 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 blah. And Annie and I were both...
Oh, I came up with a great test.
Yeah, Annie and I were like, dude, okay, lean your bike over and press it on the ice. You know, because we're standing on this icy spot. And he's like, you angle your bike over, you know, I don't know, 20 degrees or whatever.
Right.
And you push on the saddle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like this perfect test because it's, you know... That's what it would be just like if you were leaning over.
Right.
You can feel how much those studs grip the ice.
Yeah.
So you do that with a Dillinger 5. You do that with, at that point in time, he was riding the Wazias.
Yeah, he had the Terrains.
Yeah.
And there was no slip whatsoever.
None. Yeah, and then we do it with the V-tire, and it's like...
Yeah.
There's like... I mean, there was traction there, but it wasn't anything compared to the other two.
There was no feedback that they'd give you that they were going to go down.
Right. Well, I mean, I would disagree with that. They still had good modulation. I stick by, you know, sort of describing it that way previously.
Yeah.
It's just the absolute grip was considerably less.
Yeah. The dillies were, like, solid.
Yeah, and well, so were the Treens.
I'd say both of those
were really good.
Do you think that's due to stud shape?
I don't have any idea. Right. It could be stud shape. It could be rubber compound.
Placement.
Okay. Yeah, it could be a lot of different things. Okay. All I know is that, you know, from what I can tell, the V-tires in wet don't have nearly the grip.
Okay. As they do on just...
Yeah.
I don't want to say dry ice, but...
Right.
Non-melted ice.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought that was an interesting observation. What I'm going to try to do in the future is I want to try to suss this out. You know, is this a white compound tire thing? Is this a black cut? You know, does that have something to do with the grip on the, you know, a wet ice scenario? You know, because I could see where potentially, you know, the pure silica compound, the white tires, would grip very well if it's actual ice. But if it's water, it might not grip very well.
Oh.
Because back in the day, there used to end up being some tires that were out there where they were not putting carbon in them. and they could get really sketchy in the wet.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. It's something we got to suss out. But I definitely wanted to mention that the V tires, they are pretty limited when it comes to, you know, wet ice traction.
Yeah. Is V-Tire the only people making those pure silica compounded tires?
As far as I know, yeah.
Okay.
And,
I guess if you can get over how ugly they are.
Gosh. I have to admit, my bikes, they aren't that attractive.
No, they're not.
But, I mean, based upon, like, that snow avalanche, and then I rode the Snowshoe XL.
XL?
That was one of those things where I had one tire, so I don't really know how it worked.
Oh.
But I kind of know how it works. You know, it's like I was able to tell, and it seemed like, you know, both of the white tires that I've ridden on have rolled really, really fast in snow. So that we've got something coming up here. Uncle Gomez ended up contacting V-Tire, asked them if we could end up testing both a white pair of the 4.8-inch snow avalanche studded tires.
Ooh, the bigger ones.
Yep, and a black pair of the same exact size. So it's going to be same exact tire, one black, one white. And we're going to be able to see how they roll.
I don't think he asked them. I bet he told them, hey, send me one of each. I've got this idiot over here on the other side of Lake Michigan that'll... Not an idiot, but I've got this geek who will test him out for you. But,
I am Gomez. Cool. Hear me roar.
Right, exactly. So yes. Get those to me. Hey, let's take a break, use the facilities, and come back with some readers emails.
Welcome back, campers.
Hey, guys. Here we are. We're going to read some emails to you that we've gotten since our last podcast. And usually I forward those emails to Ken and he responds, as will be the pattern in this segment of the podcast.
I'm sure you have plenty of wonderful things to add, Andy.
I've got more questions to ask. So the first one comes from our friend Jim. He says, hi, guys. We got about a foot of snow here in Minnesota, and the single-track trails are open for business. Right on. My first trip out, I learned that the Husker Du tire I thought were a good idea last spring are not so great in the snow. I just bought a pair of Van Helgas, but I'm second-guessing myself as usual. So before I open them up and mount them, I thought I'd ask your opinion. My second thought is the Flow Beast Dunderbeast combo. My thinking is that these will be better on the snowy single-track, but I'm concerned that they are too soft when I ride into work and the snow is cleared away. Also, on my Surly Wednesday, they are at the limit of width, and even then I need to pull the rear wheel way back in the slotted rear mount. Will this affect the handling? They do groom the trails that I usually ride, and I'm not a heavy rider. He's 150 pounds, so maybe the Van Helga is a good choice. I'd love any feedback. Thanks a lot, Jim.
So
Van Helga's probably are pretty good.
Yeah, think? Yeah. And his weight, I think, would probably be a really good tire.
Right on.
You know, snow conditions vary so much.
Yeah.
You know, you know, if he's in the past found that he's, you know, kind of cutting through a little bit, the Flow and Dunderbeast are going to end up having definitely some more float than the Van Helgas. I've been pretty impressed with how the Flow and the Dunderbeast roll.
Yeah, you've been a fan.
Yeah, they seem to have really good grip, and they seem to end up having pretty decent rolling resistance to boot. So, you know, when in doubt, go a little bit bigger. But, I mean, I think for, you know, if you weigh 150 pounds, the Van Helga is going to be a pretty damn killer tire for a whole lot of stuff.
Totally. I bet they're cheaper, too.
I have no idea. I've never really looked at the price on them. So, but
you're not a 150-pound guy? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I would like to ride the Van Helgas, but the conditions where I could ride the Van Helgas are so limited that I've never really felt like it was worthwhile to invest in Van Helgas.
Can you imagine how fast we'd be if we were 150 pounds?
If I could put out the same power.
Dude, that'd be awesome, man.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. So, hey, Jim.
But,
yeah.
So, he had another point in there. And he talked about, well, you know, basically having to end up moving the rear wheel all the way to the rear of the slotted
drop-up. And does that change anything? Yeah.
Yeah. How much is he going to feel that difference in geometry?
Right, right.
And he's not going to feel it a whole heck of a lot. What's going to happen is, like, when you put a when you move the rear wheel back in the dropouts,
yeah,
it makes your chain stays longer. So it's going to affect your weight distribution between your front and your rear tires somewhat.
Okay.
So you're going to have more weight on your front tire than on your rear tire than you would be if it was in the shorter position.
Okay.
Now, that sometimes can be positive, that sometimes can be negative. When it comes to, like, you're riding, like, crust conditions, sometimes it's actually nice to have a little bit longer chain stays where you're more equally distributed between the front and the rear wheel. You don't have to, like,
gotcha,
sit on the nose of your saddle to be able to get over that crust without dropping through.
And that's painful, yeah.
Yeah, eventually, yeah. It's like, yeah, if you've got to do that for a while,
yeah,
that's not fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's a case where that'll end up being beneficial. It'll add more stability to the bike. So if you're in really squirrely conditions, sometimes having a little bit longer wheelbase can end up being beneficial. But having the longer chain stays will decrease the amount of weight on the rear wheel, so you won't get as much traction out of the rear wheel.
Gotcha.
So, you know, you might end up noticing that more rear wheel slip. You also might end up noticing the bike doesn't feel as playful when you're in, you know, really dry, fast, you know, flowy type kind of conditions where, mm-hmm, you know, you almost feel like you're sitting on the rear wheel and you can toss the bike around more. So it's going to affect that negatively.
Well, if he's usually riding groomed trails and he slides his rear wheel all the way to the back, would that be still a good ride?
Well, it depends on what his groomed trails are like. You know,
they're groomed. Come on.
There's a huge difference.
No one has walked in them.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Right.
For his sake. No, but I mean, like, so to bring it back to our local trails,
yeah,
we have the Manistee 9 Motorized Trail Park, which is super tight and windy.
Right.
So it's you're constantly, like, slowing down, going around a tight corner, and then accelerating.
Right.
In that kind of situation, you want to have a pretty tight rear end on your bike.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and the reason why is because it's going to end up helping with your traction, because you're going to be getting out of the saddle a little bit, you're going to be sprinting, you're going to be doing a lot of things like that.
Yeah.
You know, the bike is going to have a shorter wheelbase, so it's going to be able to get around tight corners more easily. You know, so that's where, you know, yeah, you probably wouldn't want to have it longer. You might notice the difference.
Right.
You know, short rises and things like that, you might notice the difference. Whereas if you're in a more open area where you don't really, I mean, it's more a matter of stability and just chugging forward.
Yeah.
You know, typically that ends up being more like you're breaking trail and things like that, or it's, you know, you've got ruts underneath of the snow or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's where having a longer wheelbase would be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sometimes your grooming might not be ideal. Or,
gotcha,
like, I even think about, like, the Big M area where we ended up grooming.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of times that if we go out riding it shortly after it's been groomed, there could be times where having a little bit longer wheelbase would be better because you're kind of surfing that top layer,
mm-hmm,
which might not be 100% consolidated yet.
Right, yeah.
So it's all up in the air. I mean, it really depends on what your local trails are.
That whole time you were explaining that, I kept thinking about tight rear ends.
So, I won't even ask about what kind of tight rear ends you were thinking about.
The next email comes from Ron. Thanks, Ron. I think we get a couple emails from Ron once in a while. So this is what he says. First of all, he says, Mr. Ken.
Ah, yes. Respect.
Yes, exactly. You got to respect. I'm hoping to pick your brain again on a couple different things. I'm building a winter wheel set for my Bear Grease and planning to go with 80 millimeter head alloy rims, laser spokes, and Hope Evo Ups. Yes. I'm planning to use the light skins you recommended for my mid-fat set, but once again wondering what size you would recommend. 4, 4.4, 4.8. I'm also a little baffled by the fact... I like that word.
Baffled? Yeah, it's a good word.
Yeah, so Ron was a little baffled by the fact that people spend good money on light pedals, not to mention the money they spend to reduce the weight on their other rotating pieces, but they don't seem to care how heavy or clunky their riding shoes are. I ordered what I was told was a good Shimano clip-in cleated mountain bike shoe some time back, and they are crazy heavy. But the guy at the store and other friends who are good riders acted like I shouldn't be at all concerned with the weight. Thanks again, Ron.
Okay, right, so we got two distinct things going on.
Right.
So what I first ended up writing back to him about his tire stuff, I mean, it sounds like he's building up a, you know, real nice, lightweight wheel set.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really give us any idea of what kind of conditions he wants to ride in.
Right.
So I'm like, if you're going to ride in snow, the Jumbo Jim's probably not what you want.
True.
You know, the Jumbo Jim is a great dirt tire. You know, if you get a little bit of snow, it can be good. But if you're really riding in snow, they just don't have big enough knobs to grab on. And they just don't do that great.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, you know, there's several other good tires that you might want to end up going for. When it comes to the size, same sort of thing. You know, it's like the question of if you want to go 4, 4.4, or 4.8 kind of depends as much on weight and trail that you're going to be riding as anything.
Mm.
You know, if you're going to be doing summer riding, go for a 4-inch regardless of your weight. You should be fine.
Sure.
If you need a little bit more cush, you're a heavier rider or whatever, you know, it's a really rocky area, you might be doing better with a 4.4. Depending on the situation, you know, 4.4 might get a little bit bouncier than a 4-inch. So if you're a lighter rider or a more aggressive rider, you might want to go with the smaller one and go with higher pressure.
Yeah. A lot of freaking variables.
Oh, there's a ton. Yeah. Jeez, it's, you know, if you're riding a lot of sand where it's softer conditions, yeah. You know, you're definitely going to want to go for the biggest. You're going to go for a 4.8. That's where that really comes in handy.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you'll want to run, a one size bigger front tire than you do rear. So you might want to run the 4.4 in the front and the 4 in the rear, or 4.8 and 4.4 in the rear.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. That gives you a little more flexibility because it gives you a little bit more cushion, almost like suspension-like effect off the front end of the bike.
Mm-hmm.
It also allows you, if you get into those conditions where float is really important, you can, you know, slide to the forward, you know, part of your saddle, and you can really use that front tire to float over stuff that you wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Right.
So, you know, I'm a fan of running a slightly bigger front tire than rear tire just for those reasons. It gives you a lot of, extends the range of your setup.
Gotcha.
And when the case is where you don't need that wider front tire, it's not much of a detriment.
Right.
So, that's the tire stuff.
What about the big fat shoes?
All right, so this is when I let my dork flag fly.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. I have thought about the weight of shoes.
all right.
Well, because a couple years ago when there weren't quite as many fat bike boot options.
Winter cycling boots.
Yeah, exactly. I was not able to get the Lakes, and I was not able to get the Wolfenheimers when I wanted them.
Right.
So I was like, all right. I'll get these 45 North, I don't know what they're called, but it's their winter mountain bike shoe.
Okay.
And it ends up being a really lightweight shoe.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's got a lower cuff. It doesn't have great waterproofing. Like, just because of the way the tongue design is on it.
Yeah.
The sort of the baffles or whatever you want to call it, the places where the flaps kind of go over. If you get above sort of ankle height, water is coming in those things.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, they're not a good shoe for deep snow. They're not a good shoe if you think you're going to be crossing creeks or doing anything where you might end up having, like, water get into your boots. And they don't have near the insulation of the other shoes.
A late fall, early spring kind of shoe, maybe?
That's kind of what it settled into for
me. Okay,
all right. It's a great shoe for that, and it's nice and lightweight. It feels essentially like your regular mountain bike shoes, as far as their weight and, you know, like the stiffness of the sole and all these other kind of factors.
Yeah.
It feels like those, but it's got this higher cuff and it's much warmer.
Okay.
So it's a really good shoe for those kind of mid conditions.
Yeah.
And you do notice the weight, or I notice the weight, I should say. There's times where I'm like, okay, I can tell if I'm putting on this big, heavy boot or I'm not.
Right.
You know, it's like, so if I'm going over, and I've now gone with an older version of the 45 North, you know, Wolfenheimers, and I love them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, they are definitely heavier, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, well, you're talking a difference. I don't know what it is. In my size shoe, I think it's like a pound and a half, 2 pounds.
Yeah. When I remember back in the day when I used to race, like for Iceman,
mm-hmm.
first weekend in November.
Yeah.
I would sacrifice a couple toes to wear my summer mountain bike shoes and just be cold. And I did not want to put on the Lakes because those were heavier.
Yeah.
And, I mean, how many times have I won the Iceman? I mean, gosh. Of course. So that's why I would save that weight. But, you know, in the middle of the winter, God, I want a warm, I don't care.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, it's like.
But I do want a light pedal. He's right.
Well, it's, you know, this is one of those things where if you're in a race situation or you're really trying to be competitive, go with the lightest boot you can.
And then, poop, yeah. Take a poop and you're fine.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But at the same, I mean, boots are something that's moving. That is a rotating weight thing.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, unlike your bowels, right. You know.
Right. No, they're moving too.
Different sort of scenario.
Right.
But, no, but I mean, it is rotational weight when you're talking about your shoes.
Yeah.
So, if you can drop weight there, I do think there is a performance advantage. But at the same time, you don't want to sacrifice comfort too much. And it doesn't make, you know, that huge difference. I mean, keep perspective.
Right.
I mean, you don't want to end up going something, lighter just because it's lighter. You know, you want it to end up still being functional. But at the same time, I mean, if you really want to go as fast as you can, run the lightest boot you can for the whatever insulation value you need.
Yeah, I can't sacrifice it. My toes are going to get cold, and I got to have big clunky boots.
Yeah,
and you're going to get really light pedals.
Yeah, most of the time, I mean, that's sort of where I'm going to end up going. But at the same time, you know, I do think it's one of those things you don't want to not think about, but you know. Don't overthink it.
Right.
Make sure
right.
You're comfortable.
Yeah. Next email comes from Mike. This is a quick one. Hey guys, great show. I'm on Dillinger 5's tubeless on Nexty 89mm Wild Dragons.
By the way, what? I love the name of Nexty rims. The Wild Dragons.
Wild Dragons?
Yeah.
That's pretty.
I don't remember the other ones right now, but they got all sorts of good names.
Yeah, that's nice.
I want to ride a Wild Dragon.
You know what I don't like about it? The big N-E-X-T-I-E.
Yeah, the graphics could use some.
It's like that new thumper thing.
I mean, who doesn't want to ride a pair of Wild Dragons, man?
Yeah, and in Ludington, you can ride the dragon while you ride the Wild Dragons.
Yeah.
Zero issues going tubeless. Two questions. Best tubeless sealant. Wondered about the... Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Best tubeless sealant. Orange Seal Sub-Zero versus Stans, of course. And then he also continues, what about tire pressure for studded versus non? I tend to run higher for studded, but need to experiment more. Best, Mike. Two questions. Tire sealant.
Yes, you weigh in on sealant. You've actually had more experience with the Orange Seal than I have.
Okay, so I've had issues with both, positive and negative. So I don't think there's a difference, but...
In at the same time though,
and it was tubeless for sometimes
you have extensive experience with stands,
yeah,
and whereas you have limited experience with the Orange Seal,
right? And so this is what happened with the stands on a non tubeless ready rim and a non tubeless ready tire. You're gonna have to add sealant a lot more often, mm-hmm. is what I found.
Yeah.
Okay. On a tubeless ready rim with a non-tubeless ready tire, you're still going to have to add more stands to get them to seal.
Okay.
With my rims right now, I still, with those Daily 5s, they're not tubeless ready. Bud and Lou, they're not tubeless ready. And the more sealant I add, the more, the less I have to add more air to it.
Right.
Okay. So, but with a tubeless ready tire and a tubeless ready rim, and I tried orange on that one, and it was fine.
Okay.
So I think I wouldn't hesitate on using either of them, personally.
Yeah, I have pretty limited experience with the Orange Seal.
The orange, and I used it again just the other day.
And it seems to work well.
It was fine, and I don't know. I mean, maybe both manufacturers have some information on... you know, solid particulate matter that's in those sealants?
Well, it almost seems to me like the Orange Seal is almost like a smoother but higher viscosity. Like there's smaller particulate matter, but it's like overall higher viscosity, whereas the Stans has higher particulate matter.
Yeah.
So it kind of like dries out more quickly and forms the Stans monsters and stuff like that. But it's in general more liquefied. It's a lower viscosity.
Both coated... both coat the inside of the tire super well.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And taking tires off, I'm like, okay, yep, they both coated super well. So I don't think there's a... I think both are doing a really good job. And, yeah. And I haven't mixed all categories of, like, tubeless ready rim, tubeless ready tire, non-tubeless ready rim, non-tubeless ready... You know, it's just, like, all these combinations. But at first, I was hesitant about the orange seal, but then when I used it again recently, it was fine.
Yeah, because I just had an experience with the orange seal where it didn't seal up... It was like a...
What combination of tire and rim was it?
I don't remember the exact tire and rim. I remember the rim was... it was an aluminum rim with cutouts that was like tubeless rated.
Ooh, let's not go to the cutouts.
Yeah. But I was having issues... And it was a tubeless... I think it was a tubeless ready tire, if I remember right. And I was having issues with it sealing around the bead.
Yeah.
And it might have been just that I needed more sealant or something to that effect.
See... But I found that true of stands too, sealing around the bead.
Well, but that was a situation where I'd used that tire previously with stands,
okay,
and then I'd switched over to the orange steel.
Oh,
and it just didn't seem to. It was a different rim, but it just didn't seem to perform as well.
Okay.
Whereas in the past, using that same rim with stands, it performed better. So you know that it's a really limited situation. However. And there was another time that I used, you know, orange seal, and it, like you said, it seems to coat really well. It seems to end up, you know, clotting well.
Yeah.
It seems to do a lot of these things really well. It's just, it almost makes me wonder if the lack of bigger particulate matter in it sometimes doesn't, like, coagulate as quickly or whatever. I don't know how, doesn't fill gaps quite as well or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's definitely differences between them, but I haven't been able to put my finger on exactly what it is.
Huh. Maybe you could mix them and make a creamsicle kind of sealant, though.
Yeah, either that or it's going to, like, form cement in your tires. Right, one or the right. other. I don't know what.
No, but that... And I responded to Mike saying, hey, and I gave him the situations, and I still have a bottle of orange seal that I won't hesitate to use.
Yeah, and I guess, you know? Stands I've had great success with.
Right.
So, you know, right. It's like... I don't think there's a bad option between
those
two.
That's what's happening is things are getting better and better.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, right. I think they're both solid. And Bontrager's set up too, that seems to be another good option.
Oh, they have their own little...
Yeah.
It's got three letters in it.
I've had great success with that one also. And, right. You know, it seems to be all of similar quality, just slightly different characteristics.
The next question he asks is about tire pressure for studded versus non, and this is my thinking, okay? Because we've been on ice.
Oh, yeah. Know,
is that if... Because on ice, you don't need flotation.
Nope.
You don't need to drop pressure.
Yes and no.
Because I think of it as well, and they were... Now, we probably will get into running lower pressures as faster. But on ice, I tend to... My intuition and my common sense tells me, well, put some more... You'll roll faster if you have more pressure in there.
And there's
and due to the stud placement, I'm not flattening that tire out enough, I don't think, at the higher pressure to make a difference. But I feel like I'm going faster.
Well, so okay.
Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Okay.
In general, when the tire casing deflects less, aka you've got more air pressure in there,
yeah,
you have lower hysteresis. Right. You know, you have lower loss of energy when that thing rolls because you have lower deflection in the casing.
Okay.
That said, you know, depending on what kind of ice conditions you have, if they're really smooth or if they're bumpy, if it's bumpy, running at a lower pressure will decrease your suspension losses.
Right.
And it'll make it so the tire's faster. So, you know, if you feel like you're getting a lot of jolt through the handlebars and stuff, and, you know, your body is really kind of getting worked by the terrain, you should probably go lower pressure because it's going to roll quicker. Even though you're going to increase your hysteresis, you know, your losses through the casing deformation, that's still going to end up saving you because you're going to lose a lot of energy through the energy getting transferred to you doing the bike at the higher pressure.
All right, time out. Because I'm lost now. So... Do you think that on ice, let's just go with like...
Depends on what kind of ice. That's where I'm going with this.
Oh.
If it's bumpy ice or it's smooth ice.
Smooth ice, it's a lake.
Smooth ice, if you go higher pressure, it's going to be lower rolling resistance.
Okay.
Now, that said, when you start to get a slightly bumpy structure.
Okay.
You know, like there's crust and there's... And most of the time, most of us aren't going out and just riding on a lake.
No, but just, you know, for purposes...
We're riding through snow to get to the lake, or right. we're doing all these other kind of conditions.
Right.
And, you know, you don't want to be out there playing with your pressure all the time. You want to kind of get one pressure and then have it work for you.
Right.
So I think when you're talking about plus or minus like 1 degree of pressure, there isn't much of a difference in your stud performance.
Okay.
But there can be a dramatic difference in your tire performance.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's like, depending on what kind of snow conditions and stuff you're in,
okay.
It can make a very big difference. So you might want to run a lower pressure and have a slight compromise
right.
on your stud performance versus, you know, a lower pressure and have a dramatic improvement in your on snow traction or, you know, performance and rolling resistance and everything.
Right. We got a dog who's like...
You got an old dog who like is trying to get up.
Dog is trying to get off a couch here.
Yep.
So tire pressure. Oh, jeez. So I guess you just got to pay attention and.
Well, I guess what my rule of thumb is.
Right.
I mean, in general, I wouldn't think about your tire pressure as much for the ice. If you're in mixed conditions, just run what feels good on the snow.
Right.
You know, that's going to be your best setup.
Yeah.
If you're like just predominantly ice, like it's just pretty much nothing but ice that you're riding on, then okay, yeah, run a little bit higher pressure than you would if you were just running on snow.
Gotcha.
But in general, you know, it's like, especially if you're on textured ice and things like that, you want that tire to still be soft. You want that tire to conform to the ground, because what it's going to do is it's going to put more studs in contact with the ice mm-hmm. than if you just have a couple of studs in contact with the ice. And that's one of the things that I've kind of noticed in comparing like the Terrain Wazias, which have like around 150 studs versus, you know, the 45 North, which has over 200 studs,
mm-hmm.
is that the modulation is kind of better when you have more studs, because you're kind of distributing, you know, it's you're diversifying your risk, you know.
you got more
studs that you're counting on. So if you happen to lose 5 studs, you know, like from whatever, it's like, you know, you're bouncing or,
right.
you know, just they happen to end up being a spot where they're not touching the ground or whatever, you still have got, you know, a fairly solid number of studs on the ground. So you're going to have more traction. So in general, you know, the more studs that you've got, you know, attached to the ice, the better your traction is, the better your modulation is going to end up being.
But heavier the tire.
If we're just talking air pressure,
that's not
going to make any difference whatsoever at all. I mean, yeah, if you're talking volume of tire, it's a whole other thing.
Right.
That's a whole other conversation.
All right, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, it's like, I guess we do need to mention that because it's kind of in the same breath. If you're in a situation where you can sink down to ice, so you're like in snow or something like that, running a narrower tire will get you better traction on ice if there's snow on top.
It'll get you down there quicker.
Right, exactly. You'll dig down to where there is traction.
Right.
Whereas if you got a much bigger tire, it's going to float and it might not actually get through all that snow.
Okay.
So that is a situation where there might be a dramatic difference in pressure and also in size. In general, more size than pressure.
Okay.
But in general, you don't run into that too often. And in you know, it's like, it's one of those things, like if you're in a borderline conditions where there's like snow on top of ice, you might just be better off running lower pressure and dealing with your snow traction.
Right.
Instead of having to be like super sketch on the snow and then all of a sudden it sinks through and then it like grabs. You know, it's like, you know, you can get some really extreme stuff where it doesn't modulate well or whatever you want to call it, you know,
gotcha.
Where it's like, you know, sliding and grabbing. And that can be way worse than just having a consistent slide.
Gotcha. Wow. Listen to these sweet tunes. We're going to take a quick break, come back with 2 emails and then wrap it up. Hey, we're back. Here's two more emails, and then we'll wrap up this short show again.
Quote unquote short.
Right. So this is from Mark. He's in Pittsburgh. Ooh. All right. Go Steelers. Ken and Andy, love the show. I have been riding bikes for the last 5 years, all year, and love them. I have a carbon bear grease geared and a Mukluck single speed. I took your advice and had a 29 plus wheel set built up. I-35 WDT asymmetrical rims and salsa hubs, waiting for my WTB Ranger tires to show up so I can test them out. I appreciate all the tech info you provide. It helped me make my decision. One question. What do you think of the Specialized Ground Control 4.6 inch tires? I run them on my bear grease and love them. In your tire reviews, I don't remember you commenting on them. I consider them fatter Nates. I would be interested in your comments. Thanks, and keep up the good work. Thanks, Mark. Right on. Ground control?
Well, first off, you know, hats off to Mark for going single speed on the Mukluck.
No doubt.
That's badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I appreciate that. So, there's that point. But comparing the Specialized Ground Control and the Nates, the ground control kind of fits in the same category. We talked about it earlier. It seems like there's starting to be these different categories. There's 4-inch tires, there's 4.6-inch tires, and then there's like the 4.8-inch tires.
Right.
And it seems like the 4.6-inch tires, in many cases, what they're trying to do is make a tire that has a fair amount of volume but still rolls well. Okay. So they tend not to have real high knobs or really, you know, like kind of like paddle wheel aggressive, whatever you want to call it, tread design.
Right.
And that's really where the ground control falls. You know, it's kind of similar to the Barbagazzi. It's kind of similar to the Dillinger 5. You know, it's a great all-around tire because it's that tweener size. It's you know, it's not the super big, it's not the super small, so it's got really kind of good in-between characteristics, and it works across a broad range of conditions.
Which, I'm not going to say anything. Which to me means, if it works, it doesn't work. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
Forget it. I'll offend.
So, whereas with the Nate is a really aggressive 4-inch tire. So,
right.
You're lacking considerable amounts of float compared to, you know, a ground control. But at the same time, you've got a much bigger knob. So, you know, your traction probably will be similar in certain types of snow to a ground control. But you're either going to, like, saw through the snow or other things like that. It's like, if you don't have a ton of snow, you don't have a ton of base you got to worry about.
Yeah.
The two would probably perform pretty similarly because, you know, the Nate's a slower rolling 4-inch tire that's really aggressive with good traction, mm-hmm. whereas the ground control is a faster rolling 4.6, which kind of sacrifices a little bit of absolute traction, but it makes up for it because it's got the surface area.
I guess it's a wash then?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of how I'd put it.
All right.
Yeah. So, you know, I think as far as your rolling resistance goes in most snow conditions,
yeah.
the ground control is going to be the better tire.
Okay.
It's going to be bigger. It's going to stay on top. It's going to roll along with a lot less resistance. It's probably going to be the more versatile tire.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a time that a Nate would end up working better than the other.
Yeah. I think you're going to like those WTB Rangers, though, too. That'll be nice
for
29 plus.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got a good summer setup going.
You might have to edit this, but is that computer... Are we recording?
Yes, we are.
Even though it's not moving on the
side? Yes, it is. It's moving all the way over here on the side.
Okay.
It's the big blue spikes.
That's why I have this roll. We're going to go... Mark, thanks for that comment. And then this is another one from a different Mark.
We got a lot of Marks in this show.
A lot of Marks. I don't know where Mark's from, but this is Mark from somewhere else. His subject is, are narrower rims better for dry trail fat biking? And he writes, I recently bought an aluminum hardtail fat bike with Bluto fork and have been riding it in every trail condition, dry trail, snow, slush, ice, frozen mud, wet mud. I live in the mountain west where conditions are always changing. It is not cold enough for snow nor snowy enough for the ground to always have total snow cover over the rocky, rutty trails. It is not uncommon to ride in all of the different conditions described above in the same day. My bike has labeled 3.8-inch wide tires that run a little narrow and are more like 3.7-inch, 94 millimeters wide when mounted up on my 80 mil rim. The tires look just barely wider than the rims, even though I've been running them about 12 PSI. My rims are getting beat with flat spots, dings, and scrapes. I've now come to believe that if a tire is being used for dry, rocky trails, that tire, when mounted, should be about 1 inch or about 25 millimeters wide or wider than the external width of the rim. Therefore, the tire can protect the rim. That is how most plus bikes are set up. Therefore, a 3.8 inch to 4 inch wide tire requires a 65 mil rim for trail riding. Anyhow, I want to change to a 26 by 65 mil rim. I am looking for a non-drilled, non-cutout, tubeless-ready aluminum rim that only requires a light, thin strip of rim tape to seal the spoke holes. I don't like the drilled cutout rims because a heavy rim strip and lots of tape are required to set them up tubeless. I can't afford carbon rims. After lots of searching on the internet, the closest rim that I could find was the 52 mil Stans Hugo, but it is narrower than I would like. I was wondering if you knew of a rim I seek. Also, do you think this is a bad idea? And finally, could you recommend a light, fast-rolling, tubeless-ready 3.8 to 4-inch tire that will perform in both snow and dry trail? I wonder if other riders are encountering the same problem. Thanks, Mark. So, Mark asks just a few questions for you, Ken.
Yeah, we got a little ground to cover here.
Yeah.
So, I'm not necessarily sure if the theory that he presents about the tire protecting the rim is accurate, but I definitely know kind of that rule of thumb that I've used a lot of times on the show, whereas if you're running into problems bottoming out your tire, and that's what's causing you to run more pressure versus if your tire's getting squirmy. If your tire's getting squirmy, it means, you know, and that's why you got to raise your pressure. It means you got too narrow a rim.
Right.
If you're bottoming out your tire, but the tire's not squirmy, you're probably running too wide a rim.
Okay.
So that kind of, you know, corresponds with what he's talking about. And that's been a good rule of thumb, and I don't necessarily know why, but it's worked.
No, it has, yeah.
So when he talks about the conditions he rides in, I do think a 65 millimeter rim is probably about the ideal situation. I've been amazed riding this Atso Wojtek with the 70 mil rims, the amount of range you can get out of just that 70 mil rim setup that's on there.
In terms of performance on different varying conditions?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, during the summer, I like to have a much more narrow rim because your tire's more rounded. You can have these high lean angles.
Yeah.
You know, cause, I mean, you've got gobs and gobs of traction because you've got this big fat tire on there. So you can lean the bike way far over and you've got knobs that support it.
It'll grab you the whole way over.
Right. Whereas with a 100 mil rim, a lot of times you kind of, you know, your tread is more narrow on that rim and you kind of get beyond it and it gets a little bit weird handling at the edge.
Yeah.
Then the more narrow setup, I like to think of it as, it feels more lively to me. It's a little bit bouncier, which I think is a kind of a beneficial feeling. It feels more like a traditional mountain bike to me.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to get that more out of the 65 mil rim than a 100 mil rim. I find like a 65 mil rim works really well in a super wide range of conditions. You know, so if you're running on dirt, it feels ideal, but then you can carry it over into, you know, some pretty heavy snow conditions, and as you let air out, you know, that tire flattens out and you still get all the tread on the ground.
Right.
Whereas with a 100 mil rim, it feels really good when you're in soft conditions, but when you get into the trail conditions, it doesn't feel that good.
Mm.
So I kind of feel like, you know, going with a narrower rim is a more versatile setup. So when he talks about like having this super wide range of conditions on any given ride,
yeah,
seems like 65 mil is like the ideal setup.
Right.
Now, when he asks about, you know, looking for a non-drilled, non-cutout, tubeless-ready aluminum rim that requires a thin strip of rim tape to seal it.
Yeah.
That's a big ask because I don't think anybody's making that right now.
Should they be?
Yeah, they should. I think that's the direction things are going.
Okay.
But
because there's probably a lot of guys like him.
Oh,
that
need
that specific.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Head is making a 65 millimeter rim, but it's not available yet. It might only be available to like OEM manufacturers. Same thing with the Sun Ringel Mule Fit. I think that comes in a 65, but once again, I think that's only available to OEM.
OEM?
Original equipment manufacturers, so aka bike companies, when they're speccing a bike. They'd be able to spec this rim, but, you know, Joe Blow is not going to be able to walk into the bike shop.
I won't be able to buy it. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I think they're being made now, and that's kind of your first wave, if you would.
Okay.
And I think they're going to become more readily available to consumers, but right now there's just not a whole lot of good options.
That sucks.
It does. Yeah, because I do think that's a really versatile, good setup.
Yeah.
So, he talks about getting the Stans Hugo, which is 52mm.
Not fat bike enough?
No, that's more of a plus rim than it is a fat bike rim. I mean, it would work well in the summer, but you're going to really decrease your applicability in the winter. Okay. So it's just we're kind of in between place.
If you can't find the rim width and specifications that he wants, which is 65, right, would probably be the best bet then.
If he goes 65 and can find a rim with cutouts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of options. The rims that I used in that Otso Wojtek, those worked pretty well. Okay. I think they were called like Litmus or something like that. I'm not sure if you're going to get those aftermarket or not.
Okay.
I would kind of categorize them as being similar to the Mule Fit as far as their tubeless performance. But it's a cutout rim.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a little bit more of a pain. I had issues with them when I switched from my summer setup, which is a little bit higher pressure, to a fatter winter tire. The rim strip had deflected enough that it made it so I couldn't just air up my like tubeless ready 4.6 inch tires on those rims.
You were not happy that
day. No, I was pissy that day because I've kind of gotten used to having a tubeless ready rim.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like you take a tire off, you put a tire on, you can hit it with the air compressor, and if you got your technique down, you can get it to air up. But in this case, it's a tubeless ready rim, but I had to put a tube in, I had to air it up, I had to seat one side, I had to break the other side.
Yeah.
I then had to take the tube out, and then I had to end up laying the thing down so it's loose side down.
Right.
So the tire kind of drapes, and then I had to hit it with the air compressor. I mean, it ended up adding 10, 15 minutes per wheel to get this whole thing done, which to me isn't really tubeless ready.
Right.
You know, it's like half tubeless ready. It's like tubeless ready under ideal conditions, not tubeless ready ready.
Right. Tubeless ready, that'll make you mad.
It could, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm totally with him about the lack of cutouts. And there's good rims out there. Like if you look at the Jackalope rim from Bontrager, that's a prime example where they could downsize that rim and, you know, they could make a kick butt 65mm rim that would take just a thin strip of rim strip that would do it.
Right.
You know, but like I said, you know, there's other brands like Head, you know, they've got a good rim setup. And I think they are doing a 65mm wide extrusion. It's just not available to Joe Blow.
Gotcha.
So, you know, hopefully there'll be some options that way. And, you know, I think Head will be offering them very soon if they haven't already.
Gotcha.
So we've got, you know, the Stans rim thing and all that. Then he talks about recommending a light, fast-rolling, tubeless-ready 3.8 to 4-inch tire that performs well in both snow and dry trail.
Both.
Yeah. And that's a tough mix.
Yeah.
You know, we've recommended the Jumbo Gym a lot of times.
Yeah.
It's a great riding tire, but you're going to compromise the snow performance.
Not great in the snow.
Yeah.
Unless it's just a little bit of snow.
Right.
Right.
Whereas then the Van Helga, that's going to be a little bit slower rolling tire overall, but it's going to have an incredible grip across the board. You know, it's going to be a really good tire, you know, in snow. It's going to be a really good tire in looser dirt. You know, so it kind of just depends on what your conditions are. So those kind of bookend, you know, your recommended range, depending on where you live. Yeah, and he kind of finishes out, you know, I'm wondering if other riders are encountering this problem. Yeah. I think everybody is because, you know, I think there's a lot of people getting bikes that are trying to figure out, most of us don't live in the snow belt. Most of us live, well, maybe our listeners do, but, you know, most people in the United States, if you look at it as a whole, they don't live in the snow belt.
Right.
You know, only us people that live in the northern part of the United States have that. You know, everybody who lives in the middle, you're getting tweener conditions. Everybody lives in the south, you know, you might see snow.
Right.
You know? So in that kind of situation, I mean, the vast majority of riders, you know, in North America are going to be looking for a situation kind of like what he describes.
You're not alone, Mark.
Yes. And I think the market is going to end up adapting to you know, what Mark is asking for. So hopefully soon there'll be some really good options.
And here at Fat Camp, we will make sure to pay attention to those changes, and we'll report those as soon as we hear about them.
We'll dork out on them.
Yes, exactly. But I think that wraps up this shorter show. Not really, but no, it really does wrap it up, but it's not a short show.
Yeah.
And
we thought it was going to be short, but
exactly.
It wasn't.
So shoot us an email, fatcamppodcasters@gmail.com. Check us out on the social media. The only one we do is the Instagram, because it's least
intrusive.
Yeah, exactly. It's the only one I can deal with. And we appreciate you listening, and we will talk fat bikes in another month.
Happy trails. Thanks for listening. The music we are using on today's show is a song named Melt, performed by Desmond Jones. You can find all our shows at fat-bike.com, including notes for today's show.